In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, each according to its kind. God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds. And God said, after all these things had been created, let us make man in our image. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. This states that the Creator is God, that God created all of it, that he created plants for a purpose individually, animals for a purpose individually, and then he created man. And there was a distinction between the creation of the animals and plants and man. And this was something separate. Unless you have been living under a rock, you'll be aware that a lot of people believe in the theory of evolution. And summing that up, it's that there was, as we talked about the other night, some people say there was nothing, and then suddenly there was something, and then there was a big bang, and eventually there was this solar system, and eventually this planet, and eventually some chemicals on this planet arranging themselves into a first cell. And eventually those began to swim around and do things, and some crawled out, and some eventually became reptiles, and some mammals eventually, and some apes, and then eventually that's where we come from. Now, we're going to be examining this particular argument tonight, the particular argument of the hominid evolution line, the idea that we have evolved from apes and the fossils associated with that, particularly the cranial fossils, but we'll talk about some of the also postcranial as well. We're going to be talking about Neanderthals, Homo erectus, Ergaster, Homo habilis, Australopithecines. If you're here tonight and you're not a believer, if you have been invited to come, and whether you're an atheist and you don't believe in God, or whether you're an agnostic and you're not sure what you believe on it, or whether you believe there's a God but you believe that the case of evolution is strong enough that you're trying to sort out how they might or might not fit together, we're really, really glad that you're here. If you're a believer, I'm glad you're here as well. And as we go through this, we'll be examining an argument put forward from an unbelieving point of view. Those that believe that, and there are many that would say, this is the science, this is the fossils we have, and here's the story they tell. We're going to be examining that and looking very closely at it. Tomorrow night, I'd like to invite you to come back and be here as we look at another story, and that is the account of Jesus Christ and his crucifixion and death and resurrection from the dead. So tomorrow night, we'll be looking at a positive evidence of Christianity, and we'll be looking at maybe some people's attempts to explain that away. Tonight, we're going to be looking at what is proposed as a positive example or argument for those that believe in evolution, and we'll be examining and critiquing that from the viewpoint of a believer. So here's what we're talking about. These fossils, what are they? Some people might say, well, we shouldn't even pay attention to this, it doesn't matter, you know, whatever. They hardly have any bones. Actually, they do have some very interesting bones. That skull that you see there was something. That was a someone or a something that was once alive on this earth. And so the question is, what is it? What was that? What was that? The blue is clay where they filled in where there were some missing pieces. This one isn't missing pieces. That one is. Not missing many pieces anyway. What is that? What is that? On the left, that's Professor Stringer on the right. What is that? What are these things? Some brief notes as we begin. When rebutting and critiquing evolutionary interpretation, all of the quotes and images are documented from pro-evolutionary sources. These don't come from procreation websites or Bible bookstore sales or something. These images are from whether National Academy of Sciences or this university or that university or in the media coming from those various type of sources or Smithsonian Institution. That's where the quotes and photos are going to come from. It's going to be very much viewer active. What you see is what you get. If I just stand up here and tell you some things, you don't know how to evaluate what I'm saying. And so I've gotten the images up here so that you can see them for yourself. And you can read the quotations for yourself so you're not just relying on me to tell you something. It's what you see is what you get. The images are not available for distribution. Reason why, a lot of these images, whether from college tech books or different things, they're copyrighted images. And under United States fair use laws, as I lecture on them, I can review them and critique them, but I don't feel at liberty to be distributing other people's copyrighted work. However, a lot of the images are available on the web, and those will be in blue, and so they can get access later to be able to look them up yourself on the web. And you can look for that in the blue. Lastly, added emphasis, obviously, is going to be generally mine. All right, here's what we're going to be covering tonight. I want to paint the picture very briefly up front so you kind of know where we're going. These are some skulls, and what you have here, you have a chimpanzee, Australopithecus africanus. If you're familiar with the Tong child skull, that was an Australopithecus, or Mrs. Plez, those are Australopithecus africanuses. And then there's also Australopithecus afarensis, which is Lucy, if you've heard of Lucy. And there's some other Australopithecines as well. Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Neanderthal, and Homo sapien. Notice the brain sizes. 400. These are in cc's. If you're familiar with a motorcycle, the 500 cc is a fairly small motorcycle, but it's bigger than a 250. An 1100 is a bigger motorcycle than the other. You can take a skull, and this is Wilbur, by the way. We'll be using him this evening. I found Wilbur in Philadelphia. Somebody had thrown him away, so I took him home. He's not real. He's plastic. But you can take a skull, and you can fill it with sand, and you can measure the cranial capacity and get an idea, therefore, how big the brain was. Now, notice here the brain sizes, 400, 457, 552. Then we jump up to 1,000, 1,500, 1,300. Brain sizes vary a lot. This is Juan Luis Arzuaga. Remember, all of these quotations are from evolutionists. 10% of completely normal modern humans have a brain capacity of less than 1,000 or more than 1,600. Wilford LaGrosse Clark, even in modern man, the size of the brain shows extraordinary variability, ranging from less than 900 to about 2,300 cc. So 10% of people have less than 1,100 or more than 1,600. Some people have less than 900, more than 2,300. So let's go back and look at this. The ones that I've got in yellow, those are not at all in the human brain category. The other ones are. Homo erectus skulls are in the range that some modern brain sizes are. Neanderthal is in the range that some modern brain sizes are, and also, of course, there's the Homo sapien. You will notice, by the way, that Neanderthal had a bigger brain than most of us on average. In fact, years ago, William Howell said, the Neanderthal brain was most positively, definitely not smaller than our own. Indeed, that is a rather bitter pill. It seems to have been perhaps a little larger. Actually, it was about 20% larger. We'll see more about that later. Used to, paleo artists tended to draw these different things in kind of a very gradual way, and they looked very much the same, just kind of National Geographic used to have a spread where, I mean, it was really smooth. You looked at the bones, it wasn't so smooth, but the picture looked really, really smooth. Some of the paleo artists in the last few years, I think, have done a much better job, and I've selected a few of those to illustrate what I'm going to be arguing for. This, from the front of Nature magazine, is an artist's representation of a Homo sapien from Ethiopia. By the way, when I use dates up here, I don't accept or promote the dates that they use. I'm going to be giving you the dates they use so you'll know what they're talking about. Those are not the dates I accept or use. I don't accept those old earth. That's not what we're going to be focusing on, though. But according to their dates, this individual lived about 160,000 years ago. He's a modern Homo sapien. This is a Neanderthal from a French reconstruction shop. Neanderthals are supposed to have lived from about 25,000 years ago to around 200, 230,000 years ago, something like that. So very much the same time frame. Now this would be Homo ergaster, which is very similar to Homo erectus. Outside of Africa, they're called Homo erectus. In Africa, these types of skeletons are generally called Homo ergaster. Now, each of these three, if you were in a big city and you got on a subway and the gentleman on the right sat down beside you, would you think anything of it? Would you wonder if he was a person or an animal or, you know, a beast or something? No, the person in the middle. Would you wonder, is that the Homo sapien? Would you wonder, is that a human being? Of course, you know that's a human being. And the boy here on the left, who was about a 12-year-old, would you wonder, is that an ape? Or is it? No, every one of these you would know, that's a person. This is an Australopithecine. Lucy toured the United States last year. If you go to the Natural Museum of New York, in history in New York, they've got Mr. and Mrs. Australopithecine walking along like this, and it looks not a very good representation at all, I don't think. When Lucy toured the United States in the last year or two, the museum at Houston gave a much better representation of her bow-legged stance and such. This is their representation of Lucy. Now, this is what I'm going to be saying tonight. Neanderthals are people. Homo erectus, ergaster are people. Homo sapiens are people. And that's an ape. If you got on the subway and Lucy got in beside you, you would not wonder, what country are you from? You would be calling the animal control or something, the zoo, to see who got loose. There are similarities and differences between apes and humans. Look at these skulls here. You can see the one on the right is going to be a gorilla, and then we have a chimpanzee, and then we have a human being. So the question is, are we fundamentally different or fundamentally the same? The question involves biological, legal, cultural, and spiritual implications. For instance, Wayne State University, 10 years ago, they proposed that chimpanzees should be put in the genus Homo along with us. In Austria a few years ago, an Austrian bioed said an Austrian court is studying whether a 26-year-old chimpanzee should be given human rights. And a professor from London said it's untenable to talk of dividing between humans and apes because there's no clear criteria, neither biological, nor mental, nor social. I kind of think there is. There are some definite clear criteria between people and apes. There are definitely some similarities, but I doubt anywhere out in the Congo jungle the apes are sitting around discussing whether or not they were related to us. There are some differences between apes and people. And then morally, you have the Bloodhound Gang with their song that, I won't repeat the lyrics as they are, but it basically said, since we're just mammals, let's go ahead and behave like mammals, since that's all we are. But is it true? If that's all you are, is a rather bald ape, it might be unpleasant, but if that's all you are, that's all you are. You've heard the genetic argument, I imagine. Raise your hand if you've seen this statistic before. I imagine most of you have. All right. We're going to begin with responding to that statistic. First thing might not seem that impressive to you, but it's from 2006, and here we've got from, first one is from Indiana University, and there's Duke University, some different things. And in 2006, they said, our results imply that humans and chimpanzees differ by at least 6%. Which stands in stark contrast to the off-sided 1.5. And if you're not familiar with this type of thing, you might be saying, well, I mean, to go from being 94% chimpanzee to instead of 99, that still sounds like I'm a lot chimpanzee. National Geographic had a statement that helps clear this up. The shifting boundaries between chimpanzee and human, their gene sequences are around 95 to 98% the same. This is less meaningful than it sounds. Humans share more than 80% of their gene sequence with mice, and maybe 40% with lettuce. There are some people here that can explain to you about genes and different things and how the structure of these are fairly common at the beginning. It's very deceiving kind of in a way to say 95%. It creates a picture that's different than it is. Now, this is what we're going to focus on tonight, the visual argument for ape-to-human evolution. I think it's a powerful argument for the evolutionists. And we're going to be responding to that. And I want you to see the argument, and then we'll respond to it. Here's the argument. This is from a Smithsonian chart. And these are skulls, each of them with the lower jaw missing. Sorry, his thing came out there. With the lower jaw off. And so each of these is a side view and a front view of the same. So, pardon me for losing that. All right, so this skull is the same, front side, same, front side. Each one of those, so they're different skulls, but the upper and lower in each case is the same. Now, here's the point. This, they say, is modern man. If this is modern man, could it be related to this here? By the way, we have a lot of charts to cover, so the quicker you nod your heads yes, the quicker we go. Could H be related to L? I mean, M be related to L? Not quick. Could L be related to K? Could K be related to J? How about J to I? I to H? H to G? G to F? F to E? E to D? D to C? C to B? B to A? Looks pretty convincing. This is an ape. It's a chimpanzee. They're not saying that we evolved from chimpanzees. They're just using an ape to represent the type of ape that we would have evolved from. Now, over time, they would say, what you're seeing here is the face goes from protruding prognathism snout to flat. The face goes from a lot of jaw area, small brain, to smaller jaw area, big brain. Goes from protruding brow ridges to not protruding brow ridges. And that is a pretty powerful visual argument. That's what we're going to... Do you see the argument, and do you see the force of the argument? Nod your head if you do. All right, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Points of review. Bare bones and mistaken IDs, sometimes people make mistakes about these bones. Human variation, this is one of the biggest points we're going to focus on. One of the problems with that chart that we looked at was where it said, this is modern man. That's not all modern people. We don't all have the same skull. I'll tell you what got me interested in this topic in part. When I was in college, and somebody told me, you got a weird forehead. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, the way this is real deep in right here like that. And I said, well, everybody's like that. And I looked at the person. Okay, you're not. That person's not. That person's not. That person's not. And it took me a month to find somebody else that had this same kind of deep indention there. And when I did, it was a Native American. I'm part Cherokee. So I started studying anthropology and looking up some stuff on this back in the 80s and found some really interesting things. And you're going to see that this is part of the problem, and you're going to see that some of the scientists have pointed out that this is part of the problem. The theory of evolution was started by white Caucasian people of Northern European descent. And they began with the idea that their skulls were the top of the chain. Not everybody has that skull, and we'll be looking at that in some more detail. Then ape skulls vary tremendously, more so in some cases than human skulls do, even within a single species. Then we'll look at some famous fossils, we'll look at some Stone Age tools, and I'm going to show you a new ape that they've just found that has a bigger brain, a flatter face, and it's a chimpanzee my size. up to like 6 foot five, 225 pounds. They just found it in the last few years. So we'll take a look at him. All right, bare bones. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not. Looking at those bones, can you pretty much tell what those are? That's pretty easy. You know, reptiles are just not that hard. Just paint them green and you're ready to go. Sometimes it's not as easy. For instance, if you know anything about bones, you're going to immediately recognize those are herbivores. But without the skin, if those were extinct animals, you wouldn't know everything about them because it doesn't tell you everything about some of the other external things going on. Now, of course, we've got people familiar with these that would have been able to say, oh, yeah, I recognize that as a camel or that as a cow or whatever. But then sometimes there's some really weird things. What do you suppose that might be? If you're thinking saber-toothed tiger, look at the eyes. Those are not predator eyes. Those are herbivore eyes. This is a herbivore. This is a Chinese water deer. It's in the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea. And there he is. It's kind of a weird-looking thing. But somebody says, okay, so we didn't know what that was, but the experts would never make a mistake, right? No, the experts make mistakes a lot. In fact, you're about to read that the experts make mistakes a lot. We're going to look at a few incidents, some early and some recent. There was Piltdown Man that over 500 articles were written about, and then finally, after about 40 years or more, 40 or 50 years, 40 years or so, they finally realized and announced that it was an orangutan jaw that had been filed down and a human skull. Okay, so they kind of made a mistake there. There was Ida more recently. Do you remember in 2009, Ida, big fanfare when Ida was reproduced. Do you remember it? Do you remember this maybe? Google even made the homepage, you know, a little doodle about Ida. And this was the hype. Stuart Ramsey for Sky News said, she is a direct relative. Her, Ida and her descendants evolved into humans. Mankind has been looking for the missing link, the primate that it's the root of our creation. This is she. She's the only one who could tell the whole story of a whole skeleton. She could rewrite science. She could confirm Darwinian theory, debunk creationism. She could question religion itself. All in all, she's quite a fine Stuart Ramsey Sky News. Here is the website. Uncovering our earliest ancestors. This fossil will probably be pictured in all the textbooks for the next 100 years. When our results are published, it will be just like an asteroid hitting the Earth. But you haven't heard much about Ida since, have you? That was the hype in May. These were the headlines in October. Not even a close relative. No ancestor of humans. As far removed from the monkey ape human ancestry as a primate could be, says Seifert of Stony Brook University, New York. There was Nebraska Man that came from a tooth. Somebody sent it in to Henry Fairfield Osborne up at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. And he looked at it and he said it looked 100% anthropoid. Decided it was between an ape and a man, a little bit closer to a man than, or closer to a man than an ape, but it's. He now announced Hesperopithecus, also the first anthropoid ape from America, also known as Nebraska Man, in the newspaper in London. This was the portrayal of him. And then they found some more bones and found out it was a pig. Prosthenops, an extinct kind of pig, but a wild pig nonetheless. Now, a few years ago, in Eugenie Scott, if you ever saw Ben Stein's movie, about Expelled. It's one of the people that he interviews. She's also the one, if you saw the quote the other day where she told other scientists, don't debate creationists, you'll probably lose. This is her organization here, National Center for Science Education. And two writers there said, how could a worker as careful and methodical as Osborne have made such an egregious error? I'm going to let you read the answer and spare my throat. So, let's go back to the question. Do the experts ever make mistakes? Well, yes, they do. Do they often correct each other's mistakes? Yes. But when most all of them agree that we evolved from apes, the corrections tend to be, okay, your fossil wasn't the one that's in the line, mine is, or mine fossil is, or they'll argue about some things like that, but they're still on the same page that they're saying that we evolved from apes. And let's continue and be considering this. All right, back to apes and humans. skull series. Remember that we looked at this. Here's the things I want you to be watching for. This is another thing, modern man, et cetera, et cetera. So this is modern man, Neanderthal, Homo erectus. These are older names here like Sinanthropus, but that's part of Homo erectus. Australopithecine gorilla. The Australopithecine doesn't look right there. Let me explain why. It's because it's a juvenile. A juvenile ape skull looks more human than an adult one. It's just like with almost any animal, you have the eyes are going to look bigger, this cranium is going to look bigger, the jaw is going to look smaller, and that'll change some as you go by. The tong child, which is what this, and it's not to scale either. The tong child will fit in your hand about like that, whereas that's a gorilla skull. Let me illustrate the difference between, in other words, this one would have had a very different brow later. It's because it's a juvenile, it looks like that. Let me illustrate. See the difference between a baby chimpanzee and an adult chimpanzee? See here, the forehead looks very vertical and stuff, and here, of course, you got something very different going on. So, going back to this now and ignoring that that's a juvenile, here's what you're watching for. Facial angle, and you get back to the ape, and it's very much at an angle. For us, forehead mostly up and down. For an ape, much flatter. For us, very little prognathism or snout. For an ape, you have a lot of prognathism, a lot of snout. For us, very little brow ridge. For an ape, very much brow ridge. For us, the top of our cranium tends to be like a basketball. For the ape, it tends to be more like a football. For us, the jaw area compared to that top cranium area is very small. For an ape, the jaw area compared to the cranium area is very large. Everybody kind of keep those in mind, all right? Now, consider, which of these look more ape-like and which look more human-like? Just look at that for a minute. All of those are apes. All of those are orangutans. The top one is a juvenile, so that's why it looks different. These are females, and so they lack the large canines, and these are males. So all of those are orangutans. And so orangutans also look different in the face. If you go to the zoo and look at some orangutans, you're going to see different-looking orangutans. They have different skulls, and they have different appearances. So in orangutans, they vary in their skulls, vary in appearance. They're still orangutans. Even if you dress them up, they're still orangutans. Roger Lewin wrote a book called Bones of Contention. There's a creationist book lately that has come out, Marvin Lubinow's book, Bones of Contention, by the same title. This is not that book. This is a book by Roger Lewin who wrote for the Smithsonian Institution. He's a science writer. This particular book won us an award in science literature. It's called Bones of Contention, and it discusses the egos and jealousies of the different paleontologists. It's a really interesting read in parts of it. But in the earlier part of the 20th century, when they were naming all these different species, he said much of the labeling was done in the name of egoism and a naive lack of appreciation or variation. In other words, the scientists did not understand how much variety you could have within a species. The other part was egoism. Can you see how that would work? You're out there in the field. You've been out there for 3 summers. And all you've been able to find are some toe pieces or elbow pieces of a fossil that Alan found. And so he's already called it Yadrithpithecus. And so you found a few more of those, a few more of those. That's not going to make you famous. That's not going to make sure you get funded for next year. That's not going to get you a spot in the museum. So when you find one that's a little bit different, you're motivated psychologically to say yours is something new. Yours is a new species. There's a book by a college book on physical anthropology where it talks about there's splitters and lumpers. Splitters, this is different. Lumpers, that's the same thing. When we talked about species last night, remember all those species of rattlesnakes and beetles and everything? It said splitters have dominated human paleontology for what are psychological reasons more than anything else. It's exciting if you think you've found something new. Similarity doesn't necessarily indicate common lineage. This is Lewin again. He said, similarity of structure doesn't imply genetic heritage. A shark, which is a fish, and a porpoise, which is a mammal, look similar. But that didn't mean that either evolved from the other. Now, which pair here are the same species? These are not to scale. We've cheated on scale. Just take a look at that and see what you think might be the same species. I would like the two on the right. That's what I would like. But actually, it's these two here. Now, in this case, it's because of domestic variation you've got so much radical change. These are both dogs. That's a Great Dane and a Chihuahua, back to our Chihuahua thing. Of course, very different. But they're the same species. Whereas this, that's a raccoon and a mountain lion. That is a fruit bat and a collie. So just because some things look similar doesn't mean that they're necessarily related. Which means also we can create a pseudo-sequence. That is, I'll do one right now. I'm going to evolve this into that. First, you see at the back of the eye orbit, where it's closed and here it's open at the back. So I'm going to open up the back of the eye orbit. And then I'm going to buff it out a little bit and round it off at the top and then start shortening up the snout. And there we go. You remember the Smithsonian chart we started with at the beginning where we went from the ape to the other? Well, this doesn't look all that much worse than that, although I have cheated again here on size on the fruit bat. But here's what I did. I took a lemur and turned it into a fruit bat, into a fox, into a coati, into a raccoon, into a mountain lion, into an African lion. That doesn't mean, of course, that those things evolved into each other. Interspecific variation. People vary a lot in their skulls. My skull, one of the ways you measure a skull is the cephalic index. It's the ratio of the width to the length. Charlie Brown is 100. Okay? Some people, particularly some Asians, are as high as 90. Because the face is wide and the back of the head is flatter. And so this may be 90% of that. Some people are wide-headed, some people are medium-headed, some people are long-headed. Modern races tend to go from about 90 to 70. I am off that chart. I'm down in the 60s with the Neanderthals. When I buy my motorcycle helmet, I had to buy extra, extra large. Not because, you know, it's too wide from here to here, but because it's too long from here to here. I have a very long and narrow skull, relatively speaking. It's in the Neanderthal range, as you'll see here. But people have different skulls. Some people have kind of a squarish type head. Some people have more of a V-shaped head. Some people have very wide cheekbones, like Laplanders. Some people, like this gentleman from Melanesia, have sloping foreheads and heavy brow ridges. Some people have eyes in the middle of their head. Some people have eyes toward the top of their head. Some people have eyes very close together. Some people have eyes far apart. And those faces are different because those skulls are different. All of these are human skulls. The last one is pathological, microcephalia. But all of those are human skulls. Let's take a look at Neanderthal. Neanderthal, this is the old man of La Chapelle aux Saints, one of the most famous Neanderthals. This is Shanidar from over in the Middle East. There's the type specimen up at the top. Here's some of the differences between Neanderthal and what's supposed to be modern Homo sapien now. Notice, again, the base of the basketball shape on top compared to the football shape. Notice the occipital bun back here. See that thing sticking out at the back? Occipital bun. Notice very little forehead here going up after the top of the brow ridge. Almost no brow ridge here. A little bit of prognathism. No chin sticking out. Those are some of the differences between what they say is modern man and Neanderthal. This is an Australian Aborigine. Look at the forehead. Do you see this gentleman has a sloping forehead, heavy brow ridges? This is an Australian Aborigine. After the heavy brow ridge, it just slopes back at an angle. There's no main vertical part of the forehead at all on this Australian Aborigine. Look at the difference in these two skulls. This is an Australian Aboriginal skull found at a river about 100 years ago. Look how dramatically different it is from the one of these skulls that's kind of like this one right here. Notice this gentleman here. Just notice the ratio difference when we're talking about above the ear to the top of the eye orbit line up compared to down here. See, here you've got very little down here compared to a great deal up there. Here you've got more significant down here to there ratio-wise. This skull is from someone from the Ulna tribe in Australia, and the back doesn't look like a Neanderthal skull at all because it's not long and it doesn't have that occipital bun sticking out the back. But look at the front. This is supposed to be modern man. This is supposed to be Neanderthal. And so look, compare the Neanderthal front to this one. Watch the facial angle, facial angle. Watch the brow ridge, watch the prognathism. Look from the top of the brow ridge to where the forehead starts going back. It's not much bigger than the length of the tooth there. But this is a human being, of course. And a few years ago, BBC covered that the London Museum was going to return human remains to the Australians and Tasmanians. Some of the scientists didn't like this, but the indigenous groups were glad that this was being done. Listen to this. Among the remains held at London's Natural Museum, Mr. Dillon said, were the skulls and leg bones of two Aboriginal men who were hunted down and killed by a white expedition in 1900. Once dead, the men's skins were reportedly boiled off them on the spot. White men went down there, hunted these two men down, shot them, killed them, boiled them, and sent the bones to London Museum, and it took the bones. You do that, what's going to happen to you? You should be arrested. You should be in prison. You should be put to death. Why did that happen? Operating on the assumption that somebody that looked different than them was not as human as them. This is a cast of one of the Australia or Tasmania skulls that's way after the time that Neanderthal was supposed to be gone. It's dated as an old skull. I think they date around 15,000 or something. But I want you to look. It's very similar to a Homo erectus skull, if you just look at that. Racism and evolutionary theory. Henry Fairfield Osborne here is comparing a chimpanzee and a Neanderthal and a Frenchman. It's always going to be white European type thing, Frenchman. And here he says, compare the most highly developed intellectual European type. And he says with La Chapelle, the Neanderthal, how it's ape-like. But then look what he says. It must be noted that many of these features may be found in recent human skulls of inferior races. The evolutionists were racists. This is Huxley, Darwin's right-hand man. He says, the Neanderthal cranium is by no means isolated as it appears to be at first. He says it's closely reported by the flattened Australian skulls. So Tasmanians were reported. This is New York Times. Now, this I didn't get direct. This is one thing I've got that may have, I think this came from some other site. I didn't get this directly from that, but I just stuck it in there today because I thought it was interesting. And see there, it calls them missing links, the Tasmanians. Charles Darwin in his book, Descent of Man, quotes and agrees with another fellow who says that the civilized races will exterminate and replace the savage races. And he says the time's going to come when the gap between ape and man, man and ape, will be farther than even, what's he say, even the Caucasian to something higher and something as low as a baboon. Instead, listen to the racism, instead of what he perceives as the smaller gap now existing between the Negro and Australian and gorilla. Eugenics. Charles Darwin's cousin coined the word eugenics. He favored fertility for fine. How many of you know what eugenics is? Raise your hand if you know what eugenics is. Okay, eugenics is the idea that only certain people should have children and other people shouldn't. He favored fertility for fine minds, sterility for the stupid. Nobody denies his ideas led directly to the horrors of the Nazi era. Oh, who said that? Some preacher said that? Steve Jones, professor of genetics at University College London, said that. He's president of the Eugenics Society, which is now called the Galton Institute. These were some of the posters from the time of eugenics in Nazi Germany. The nation that had the second largest eugenics movement was the United States. Here's a pre-World War II German poster. You know, only the genetically healthy, are the one. We do not stand alone. Look at the flag nations with them. What's the first one listed? United States. This is before World War II, 10,000 people sterilized in California in the United States. You remember the Scopes trial? He taught evolution. The book he taught was from civic biology. Here it talks about the highest type of all, Caucasians, and then eugenics. When people marry, there are certain things the individual and the race should demand. Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood, was a violent racist. Birth control to create a race of thoroughbreds. Now, Planned Parenthood over in New Jersey says, oh, she was not a racist. Oh, no. Really? Really? This is the book, What Every Girl Should Know. The Aboriginal Australian, the lowest known species of the human family, just a step higher than the chimpanzee. Oh, no, that's not racist at all. Roger Lewin, again, the evolutionist, talking about the days of Henry Fairfield Roswell. No small gulf divided the superior races from the inferior races in the views of Osborne and others. Racism of a peculiarly pure intellectual form, persistent theme of American-British anthropology. Osborne was a leading figure in the eugenics movement. These are Australian Aborigines. There's a principal, there's a senator, Yvonne Goolagong, the tennis champ, as you'll remember. These are Australian Aboriginal children. Some Aborigines have blonde hair, some have black hair. They're not Asian, they're not African, they're Australian Aborigines, that's what they are. Further human variations. Here's the Melanesian that we were looking at earlier. Look at the sloping forehead, heavy brow ridge. This is an Eskimo. I want you to look in particular. Now, you've got a high cranium here, but what's interesting about the Eskimo is the shape of the skull and the huge cheekbones. Notice here, typical skull is shaped more like this. The Eskimo skull is the same shape, upside down or down. Compare the cheekbones here on typical average people and compare the cheekbones on the chimpanzee and compare the cheekbones on the Eskimo skull. Very interesting. These are Native American Indians. Some look quite like our skulls. Some look like that Eskimo skull. Some, look there, you see the longer skull and the some occipital bun on the back. Some have some prognathism and such, or a brow ridge. People have different skulls. If you've ever seen an Indian head nickel, you've all seen buffalo nickels. That was a composite of three Native Americans that were asked to sit for a portrait. One of those was Chief Irontail. He was a friend of Admiral Dewey's. He survived both Little Bighorn and Wounded Knee, although Custer did not. He tried to capture Custer. He was a teenager, and he and some other teens were just about to capture Custer when Custer was killed. But this is him without his headdress. Look at those brow ridges. Heavy, heavy brow ridges. This is Richard Severnfold of Lehman Brothers back in the banking scandal time. This is Nikolai Valuev, Russian heavyweight champ. Look at that forehead. Look at those brow ridges. Would anybody here like to step up to Mr. Valuev and tell him he's not quite as human as you because he has a different skull? Right ahead. Was Osborne right? Let's just dig up Mr. Osborne, because he was a racist, and he said, well, yeah, you can find some of these things in inferior races. And he might say something like this. Okay, so sometimes you can see this. But did the Aborigines land on the moon? Did the Eskimos invent the computer? Well, let's respond to that. A lot of people have felt that if your forehead slants back, then you just don't have much frontal lobe. And they'll say, that's Neanderthal's problem. He had a big brain, but not enough frontal lobe. Well, this person right here has a lot of frontal lobe, right? So if we're going to go by brain shape, then that should be like a nuclear physicist, perhaps. You know what that is? That's a hunter-gatherer as well. That's a South African bushman. Okay? We're going to come back to that in just a second. But first, responding to the Osborne argument, what do you see there? Where were those things invented? Here. Mostly by what? In the case of Einstein, it would be something different, but mostly in the case of Northern European descent. Osborne says, voila, what did I say? Well, here's my question. Then how come it waited to be done here? Because you have a lot of Northern Europeans back in Northern Europe. Well, there was lots of other things invented back in Northern Europe. Let's go back a few hundred years before the Renaissance. How much progress was that gene pool making before the Renaissance? From, say, 800, 900, 1,000. How much progress was being made in Europe? Almost nothing. Why? Stimulation makes a big difference. The Renaissance came along, and several things happened. They started getting some math from the Arabs. They started getting some ideas of philosophy and politics and stuff from the Greeks, and being stimulated by some art from some other places, the Greeks and such. And Gutenberg invented the printing press, and then knowledge started, and then boom, boom, boom. Then you had the United States open up, and people came over here of adventurous spirit, and you couldn't just do the same thing you did yesterday. If you've ever lived in Europe, have you noticed that they are very much into doing the same thing day to day? Well, here you had to do something new. And you also had to interact with other people around you. And when they landed at Plymouth, the Indians showed them how to plant corn. And then this colony interacts with that colony, and then they come up with a system that promoted free enterprise and property, rights and stuff. And guess what happened? Boom! But if you're part of a hunter-gatherer tribe, there's not a whole lot of motivation to build a ball-bearing plant or start a university, because you're just going to be in this area for a little while, and then you're going to go on. So you can have a forehead like this or like that and be an Aborigine. I mean, and be a hunter-gatherer. You can have a forehead like that, and maybe you're a rocket scientist. And maybe you say, would you like fries with that? But here's this old idea that the brain size makes the difference. This is from BBC, quoting Professor Ralph Holloway, one of the leading experts, evolutionists on anatomy of brains, said the second thing you can tell about the frontal lobe of Neanderthal, it's no different from what you find in modern Homo sapiens. What was the first thing you notice? The first thing you notice is it's bigger. Bigger brain, 20% bigger. But what about is it it's sophisticated? Holloway said the shape of the frontal lobe, absolutely no difference in what you find in modern Homo sapiens. I should think this should lead that basically their cognitive abilities are the same as our own. Here's some brain sizes. Chimpanzee, 400. Gorilla, 543. Australian Aborigine, 1278, up close to the average. Hindu, 1335, right at the average. Egyptians, the first and second dynasty, had some bigger brains. Europeans, about 1440. Japanese have Europeans beat on that. Eskimos have the Japanese beat. And Neanderthals have us all beat, pretty much. Neanderthals had big brains because they had big heads. What do you suppose is going to be in a big head? It's going to be a big brain. The old Neanderthal idea used to look like that. This is from a book by Time Life, and they're not saying he still does. They're kind of putting down the old idea and saying that one of the worst things was the idea of presenting him as so stupid. When I was a kid at Field Museum in Chicago, I think I saw this statue, and there you have him. He's gnawing on his bone. And Time said one of the worst things about that portrayal was showing him so stupid in that Time Life book. This is a more recent representation of Neanderthal. And I've really enjoyed, I started studying this stuff in the 80s, and I've really been enjoying as the years go by, Neanderthal keeps getting smarter and smarter and more recent because they're finding more evidence. This is a Neanderthal burial representation of it. I've got to move here quick. 2007, new evidence debunks Neanderthal myth. Discover Magazine, top stories of 2008. Cavemen just like us. Neanderthal diets are sophisticated, tools efficient, developed more similar to ours than they ever imagined. They smoked fish. Evidence has been found they buried flowers with their dead. January 2010, body of ornamentation, jewelry, widely accepted as conclusive evidence for modern behavior and symbolic thinking, had not been recognized until Neanderthals until now. Now, since then, some claim, well, maybe that wasn't Neanderthal, but there's a lot of evidence. Here, this is thought to be, in the museum in Slovenia, a Neanderthal flute. Those who don't want to think it's a flute says, no, it's a bone an animal chewed on. It looks a little like a flute. Washington Post, Neanderthals reimagined. Neanderthal genome reveals interbreeding with humans. How closely are they related to us? So closely that some researchers group them and us as a single species. Right. I would see them as a form of humans a bit different than humans today. Not that much. Welcome to the family. Science Daily, 2011. Non-Africans are part Neanderthal. University of Wisconsin-Madison, this is last year. Genetic evidence shows that modern humans interbred with Neanderthals. Neanderthal genes still exist, and they exist in you, most of you, comprising 2 to 3% DNA, approximately the same as you have from one great-great-grandparent. You have, most of you, as much Neanderthal in you as you do one great-great-great-grandparent. How could that be? Because that's pretty close. Because all of your ancestors have some Neanderthal in them, on average. The Neanderthals were in Europe, and it's been a lot there. Homo erectus, real quickly. Homo erectus is not as, instead of bigger brain than us, is typically more, on average, smaller brain than us. And a heavier brow ridge. But here's comparing to a Homo sapien from Australia and Homo erectus. Not that much difference. Here from Gimme Shelter, New Scientist. Looks like we knew they used stone tools. Now it looks like they built huts. Ancient Mariners, smarter than we expected. Made sea voyages, probably used language to communicate. Homo erectus was clearly not a glorified chimp, says Moreward. Hunted animals with well-crafted spears, we believe they made sea crossings. Its cognitive abilities, Homo erectus, may be due for a reappraisal. Thank you very much. National Geographic. Just recently, 2010, Homo erectus invented modern living. New study suggests modern living might have originated with them. Here is the full skeleton of a Homo ergaster, which is similar to Homo erectus, except in Africa. Here it's evolved side by side. Evidence that Homo erectus and Neanderthal and the rest of us that they call Homo sapien all at the same time. Concurrence, according to the evolutionist dating system method. These are their dates, not mine. But even if you use their dates, all three of these have been around side by side for about the past 200,000 years using their dates. Here we go. Neanderthals lived between 28,000 and 230,000 years ago. So there's Neanderthals, according to their dates, not mine. I don't accept their dates, but we're putting them up there. Homo erectus, recently is 27,000 years ago, up to 1.6 million years ago. All right, so there they are. And then Homo sapiens, 160,000 years ago, 195,000 years ago, fossils of Homo sapiens. And here we've got in Science News, anatomically modern Homo sapiens up to 250 or 200,000 years ago. And here, Science News 2010, 400,000 years ago. So instead of there was Homo erectus, there was Neanderthal, there was human beings, you've got them. And just like today, we've got different ethnic groups of people in different parts of the world. These are people. This is Lucy, okay? Compare Lucy to, that's a person, this is an ape. New Scientist, 1993, I agree with this. Wolpoof and his colleagues are proposing nothing less than the complete abolition of Homo erectus on the grounds that the species is insufficiently distinct from Homo sapiens. All fossil specimens of Homo erectus and archaic Homo sapiens, including Neanderthals, should be reclassified into a single species, Homo sapiens. I agree. And based on this evidence, I think that you can see why you would agree. This is not popular among most scientists, but these are evolutionists that have proposed this. Here's one thing where they're talking about many previous studies had focused exclusively on European skeletons. The prevalent Eurocentricism of previous studies has obscured things. Homo habilis, not going to talk about him much. Here's a few of the scrappy remains of Homo habilis. blah, blah, blah. It's crushed little pieces of bones and stuff. But here's Bernard Wood and Collard are saying Homo habilis and Homo rudolphus don't belong in Homo. And then here's Juan Luis Arzuaga. Homo habilis was physically similar to Australopithecines. From a morphological point of view, there isn't much reason to put it in our genus Homo. It would seem more transparent to put it over with the Australopithecines. You know what Australopithecine means? Australo means southern. Pithecus means ape. It's a southern ape. So far, what we've seen is this. Neanderthals are people. Homo erectus, I believe, are people. Homo sapiens are people. It's people. They're all Homo sapiens, like those scientists have suggested. Australopithecines are apes. The word means southern ape, and that's what they are. Homo habilis, they're saying, the outside of them looks like you should put it there. However, it's not so clear that their intelligence was ape-like because we found some crudely chipped stones. We're going to end with those stones in just a few minutes. Australopithecines. Here's, you've heard of Lucy. There's Lucy. Okay. All right, that's not Lucy. All right, that's Lucy. Okay. The hip bones were crushed into 40 pieces. If Stephen Lovejoy put them together correctly, and perhaps he did, and other people say maybe he didn't, but or some Christians believe he didn't. I don't know if he did or not. But if he did, then it has hip bones more similar to human, but that's Australopithecine. And because of that hip bone, if he got those 40 pieces glued back right, they've often thought that Australopithecine walked around very erect. But now a lot of scientists are realizing that's not really, it wasn't, it was, we'll see in just a second. There's one thing in this paleoartist description that I think looks quite human, and that's the white of the eyes. Okay, that's not fossilized. You take that out, and it looks like that. That's an ape. All right. This is from Roger Lewin's book again. This is from Cleveland Museum. This is a chimpanzee. This is a person. This is Australopithecus. Now let's just borrow the missing lines from the chimp. And notice, even they say, Australopithecus afarensis, though it's a hominid, is much more like a chimpanzee than a modern human. Yes, it is. This is Australopithecus africanus. There's that tongue child that we talked about at the beginning. Now, compare it to a chimpanzee skull. Now, here's what's interesting. Afarensis was mostly body bones without much skull. Africanus was mostly skull bones without much body. But here's what's cool. They speculated both of these, you know, it's kind of being between human and ape and everything, of course. And then they found more head bones for this, and they found more body bones for that. And guess what happened both times? When they found more head bones for this, it was more ape-like than they expected it to be. And when they found more body bones for that, it was more ape-like than they expected it to be. Maybe because it's an ape. Juan Luis Arzuaga, professor of human paleontology in Madrid and visiting a professor at University College London. Australopithecines, to be sure, the only human characteristics these fossil hominids, most of them had, was an erect posture, bipedalism. As far as their brain, they're in the same category as chimpanzees. There is Lucy. All the white part is recreated. Okay, you notice the feet have to be recreated. Now, they're in the museum. They assume they made these footprints. Those footprints, whoever left them, that didn't leave a sign saying, these footprints made by Australopithecines. We don't know, but they assume it was them. But that's an older representation. This, as I said, is a much better representation from the university, from the Museum of Houston. Thing is, if you have an ape walking around on two legs, that's nothing new. Look at this, bonobos. Used to be called pygmy chimpanzee. Sometimes they walk on two legs. And orangutans and gibbons, you can sometimes see on two legs, of course. So it's not that big a deal. Plus, just because your great-great-great-great-grandfather was a biped, used 2 feet, that doesn't mean that everything that walked on two legs is your great-great-great-great-grandfather. Okay? That walks on two legs. That doesn't mean you descended from it. That's on two legs. And so is that. That doesn't mean that they're in the human lineage. Southern ape, this is really exciting. Littlefoot, as far as I can tell, they're still working on getting this thing out of the stone in this cave down there. I'm interested in it. but I can't find much more lately on it. But, and I guess maybe some scientists aren't that excited about it. But what's really interesting about it to me, it's an entire Australopithecine skeleton. They haven't assigned it a species yet, last I read. But it's a whole skeleton, and it's got the feet. John Gerst, one of the paleo artists, said the museum's always wanted them to make human-like feet for Lucy. Well, this Australopithecine has the feet. And guess what? Chimpanzee-like morphology that had foot, the foot had grasping tree-climbing capabilities. I agree with Sebalter Piedal that it is likely Australopithecus nested in trees, probably spent part of the day feeding in trees, as do orangutans and chimpanzee. Now, what did Arswaga say was the only big deal about an Australopithecine? He said, in the brain, it's like a chimpanzee. The only big deal is it walked erect. Well, now that we got some feet on an Australopithecine, and it looks like it slept in the trees and ate in the trees, what do you got? You got an ape. I don't have time to talk about spinal alignment. It's very interesting. They say, oh, but it was more in between, blah, 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 blah. A bonobo is more in between than that. It's an ape that we have around today, so that's no big deal. Some have tried to say, oh, look at the jawline. It's more like us. Stephen Jay Gould says, that looks ape to me. And Smithsonian Institution says, no, it says it's like the ape, not human. Tools. We're to the end now. Just a few more charts here. I want to show you these tools. Cut a little bit about Tasmania, and then that new ape, and we'll be done. Thank you for your attention. You've been very patient. Do you remember when they said Homo habilis? Some of the scientists said shouldn't be even in Homo. It should, you know, seems like it should be more like one of the Australopithecines, except for maybe not in intelligence because they found some tools with it. Ready to see its tools? From a morphological point of view, there isn't much reason to accept Homo habilis as a member of our genus. However, it's not so clear that their intelligence was ape-like. Associated with Homo habilis are crudely chipped stone tools. It's not so easy to say which ones were the tools and which ones were the pieces that broke off. But are you ready for their tools? All right, coming up. There they are. You're laughing. There is too much intelligent design in the breaking of those rocks to have possibly happened by accident, or so we're told. I think that's very ironic, that you can look at those rocks and decide that that couldn't have happened by accident, that that's just too much design to have happened by accident. But you look at creation, oh yeah, that could happen. This is Paleo Direct, and they sell them. And they point out, warning, there's a bunch of these tools for sale on eBay. Many of these are nothing more than ancient rocks that are broken by this or that. Not every broken cobblestone is a human-created Paleolithic tool. That's right. Now we get to Homo erectus and Neanderthal tools. You remember the movie Crocodile Dundee, where he goes, now that's a knife. All right, that's a tool. Otherwise, they talk about Stone Age. When they're talking about Stone Age, they're talking about the Old World. They don't talk about Bronze Age, Iron Age, stuff over in the New World. You know why? Partly. Some of my ancestors, I said, were Native American. Now, my grandfather can remember his grandmother still dressed as an Indian. If you're like me and you've got some Native American in you, just a few hundred years ago, what were our ancestors using for tools? Stones. Does that make them less human? Doesn't make them less human at all. That's a tool. That's a tool. Ending notes. Receding chin was one thing I couldn't find as well for a while until I found the Tasmanians. They really didn't have much of a chin. Group of last surviving Tasmanians. William Lane, Billy King, last captured male. Please. Last captured male to die. Last years of his life as a whaler. Even in his death in 1860, he gave him no respect. Dr. Ludwig Krauthner removed his head in the name of science. His head has never been found, neither the tobacco pouch made out of his scrotum. That's how they treated a human being. That person is half Tasmanian. This man has two Tasmanian, two Aboriginal grandmothers, two white grandfathers. But what's his general appearance? It just disappears. This particular gene combination disappears pretty quickly when intermarrying with Caucasians. Well, most Neanderthals have been found where? Europe. Some Middle East and Europe. Well, Caucasians have been up there a long time. And so that you don't, and it's not the same as Australian gene, but it's kind of similar. Last thing, variation in apes. We've looked at a lot of different skulls. Look at those two skulls right there. See how the nose cavity is very, very much the same. Are the eyes the same? No. All right, how about these two? Okay, those eyes are kind of the same. Top of the head is different. Look at the nose hole. Nothing the same. How about this? Why, that's altogether different. The nose hole is different. The eyes are nothing alike. And the top of the head is completely different. You know what all of those are? Those are all apes, and those are all the same species. And modern. All of those are examples of gorilla. This is from Physical Anthropology. Steinen wrote, remember when I said the book that said splitters and lumpers? Splitters have dominated human paleontology because of psychological reasons. It's more exciting. That's on the page previous to this. This page points out this. Interspecific variation. A series of six skulls, all members of the same species, gorilla. Illustrate the point. The great amount of variation, how many species represent here? In this case, they're all modern gorilla. Yet a series of modern hominid fossils that shows much variation or less would be broken up by a great many paleoanthropologists into a number of distinct species in general. And we close with the Billy Apes. October 2004, scientists believe they've discovered a new group of giant apes. The natives had been talking about lion-killing apes. There's a picture of some Germans when they'd been down there back in the 30s or something, and then found from The Guardian, giant lion-eating chimps in the Magic Forest. Kind of extravagant title there. July 14th, 2007. Deep in the Congolese jungle is a band of apes, according to local legend, kills lions. We don't know that they do that. But Clive Hicks, Clive Hicks from University of Amsterdam, went down there and set up some things. And one of his men did see one eating a leopard. Now, they don't know if he killed the leopard or if he just found the leopard and said, leopard. But this is where they're found. And they set up a motion camera or something and caught a picture of one coming through. This is how big they are. They have a flatter face. You're about to see a dead one in front of a couple of grown men. That's a Billy ape. They've found out it's just a large variety of chimpanzee. But look at the grown men behind it. Now, this is the only photograph I have of a skull. But we're going to compare it to a chimpanzee skull, okay, from Bones Clones, a sample. And, of course, chimpanzee skulls vary greatly as well. Watch this. We do the facial angle. You see how it's much flatter here instead of the big indention? Now, we're going to look at the ear hole. And we're going to go to where the neck muscles attach. And so that'll give you an idea of how, you know, much it might be like this or a little bit more like this. So you're from the ear hole back to the neck muscle, ear hole to the next muscle. I'm not saying the other muscle connects with the ear. I'm just drawing a line there. So it's got a different position that would indicate probably more foot for standing up more often. Look at the top of the cranium radius compared to there. And if we go across the ear hole and compare the area above it to the area below it compared to the chimpanzee, look how you have the big brain toward the ratio toward the jaw instead of big jaw ratio toward the brain. Now, we know what this is, though, because it's still walking around out there or hanging around out there in the jungle. It's a big chimpanzee. But on that bigger body, guess what it's got? A bigger head. Guess what's in that bigger head? A bigger brain. And a bigger ratio of the brain. And a flatter face. And perhaps a more upright walk, but it's still a what? It's still an ape. All this is part of what we've said before. Yes, it is a very powerful argument when you line up those skulls, but when we've looked at the evidence, and even some of the evolutionary scientists, Homo sapiens are people, and Neanderthals, in fact, sometimes they're classified as Homo sapiens Neanderthals. Some scientists have classified them that way. And some are saying that Homo erectus should also be classified Homo sapiens. Whereas the southern apes are southern apes. Thank you very much for your attention.